Hello and welcome back to the Thai League Central podcast. My name is Gyan and I will be your host for today's episode, and I'll be looking ahead to Thailand's final game of World Cup qualifying against Malaysia. Fortunately, I will not be doing it alone because I am joined by Keish from Astro Malaysia. Keish, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me, man.
Yeah, it's a really good time to talk finally and to have you on this podcast. Quite a big game coming up between Thailand and Malaysia. But I think I'll start by addressing the sort of the elephant in the room, which is that even though this is a big rivalry between us and every game between Thailand and Malaysia is exciting, both of these teams are now out of the running for the third round of World Cup qualifying. And for Thailand, that was a big disappointment because we made it last time. So we've been disappointed by that. And I want to ask you, from a Malaysian perspective, how have you felt about your campaign?
It's actually been really, really frustrating for Malaysia as well. It's not that we've had like an example to like juxtapose it with or compare it with, right? It's not like we made it far in 2018 as well. I think the disappointment and the frustration generally stems from the fact that this is probably Malaysia's best team that we've seen in a very long time. Most Malaysian fans would think of 2018, 2019 as 2 years in which Malaysia played some of the best football we've played like since ever, I think. Like, for example, for me, on a personal level, I would say that since I've started following Malaysia, maybe in the mid-2000s, 2018, 2019 is probably the best football I've seen Malaysia play ever. In my life, at least. So, I think that's the frustrating part, because Tan Cheng Ho has built such a resilient team, a team that's capable of playing football on the front foot, even against bigger opposition. A team that learned how to navigate past the inferiority complex that sort of plagued the country for like years, and more importantly, a team that was. Like what's the best word for it? A team that was super structured, right? A team that was super hardworking. And I think after all of that, most Malaysian fans expected there to be a dip in the performance, because obviously there's been a gap of like months because of COVID and all that kind of stuff. But the level of the dip was unprecedented. The way we capitulated against UAE, responded well against Vietnam, I must say that, but not nowhere close to the levels we played in 2019. I think that's what got many Malaysian friends frustrated, and now we're back to having this a familiar sense of regret, because that's what we've just been doing with for the past decade or so. There's always that anticipation, and then that's followed by regret, and that's what we're feeling at the moment. So it's really, really frustrating.
Yeah, and I guess from your end, that also comes from the performances, right? Because Malaysian fans have grown to expect a certain way. Is that what you're saying mainly? Is the performance drop is almost more disappointing than results drop?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I can use the game against UAE as the perfect example, right? I mean, granted, we were playing on a neutral venue. I mean, not necessarily a neutral venue, but we were not exactly playing in front of like Malaysian fans. And granted, there's been like, things like COVID and all that kind of stuff. Malaysia has had some injuries as well. Our main centre-back, Sharul Saad, picked up a late injury and had to miss all these games in the Middle East. But the way we played against UAE was a perfect example, because most Malaysians remember that game that we played against UAE in 2019, where we lost the game 2-1. But Malaysia played on the front foot for the entire 90 minutes. And this was against the side that 4 years prior to that trashed this like 10-0. So you'd think that there would be some sort of fear, some sort of hesitation. But no, that night, Malaysia completely took the game to the UAE. Obviously, there was about 40,000 Malaysians at least at the Bukit Jalil Stadium, so that could have definitely played a part. But it wasn't just that. The players were brave. The players were industrious. You had a team of 11 men who were consistently working on and off the ball. And that was what most Malaysians wanted to see. losing was okay, because that night we lost two. And if you put that 2-1 defeat and you put that 4-0 defeat into context, both games represented 0 points, right? So losing wasn't essentially the problem. It was the way we lost the game. It was the lack of any positive football. It was the lack of the sort of intensity and structure that we've grown accustomed to seeing under Tan Cheng Ho. And I think that's what frustrates a lot of Malaysian as well. It's the sudden difference, is the glaring differences rather, in the performances between 2019 and now.
Yeah, I think that's a fantastic point. We'll come back to style in a little bit, but I also want to ask you about your most recent game against Vietnam, where you narrowly lost 2-1, which effectively sealed your fate. Now you're in the same boat as us. What did you make of that game?
From the point of view of Malaysians, it was a lot better than the one against UAE, primarily because, the situation in Malaysia is that heading into this particular World Cup qualifiers, we've had three new major additions to the team. Now, three of them, a couple of them are like naturalized players, which is Liridon Krasnichi in the middle of the park. And we've got a 34-year-old Brazilian-born striker called Guilherme de Paula up front. These are the two, you know, glaring ones. And then you've got Dion Kools, who obviously, you know, plays his club football with FC Midtjylland in Denmark. And he's a big one. He's the one that everyone, I mean, Malaysians have been trying to persuade for a very long time to play for the national team. And he's obviously played for Belgium under 21 and all the kind of stuff. So, but all three naturalized boys looked a little off the pace in the first game against UAE. And I wouldn't necessarily blame them for that, because Dion Kools, understandably, has only literally like met the team 3 days before the game against the UAE.
Mm.
But you cannot excuse Di Paola, who has been playing in Malaysia for a very long time, who has played with some of these boys in the national team prior to this, and came into the national camp way earlier as well compared to Dion Kools. The same with Liridon Krasnichi as well. And even despite it being new for Dion Kools, the performance that he put up against UAE, despite looking shaky at the back, but some of the composure that he brought to the team and the composure that he brought to the team in the game against Vietnam was admirable. Whereas Liridon struggled against the UAE, really, really struggled, and bore the brunt of like Malaysian fans and how upset they were. The same can be said about Di Paola as well, who really looked isolated, you know, statistically just had one touch in the box. I mean, you're a naturalized striker. The expectation is for you to offer something that the Malaysian boys can't necessarily do inside the box, right? And he wasn't exactly doing that against the UAE. So when we came into the game against Vietnam and Tan Cheng Ho rang the changes that appealed to Malaysian fans, number one, Brendan Gunn came back into the mix after being suspended for the game against UAE. And everybody loves Brendan Gunn in Malaysia. He wears the, you know, his heart on his sleeves. He's the guy that tracks back the most. He's the guy that runs into the box the most. He is literally an absolute workhorse in the middle of the park. And that's exactly what Malaysians want to see. And so having Brendan back was a big plus. We reverted back to a midfield of workhorses, and that was rather functional. Something that was reminiscent of our team in 2019. So no Liridon, he didn't start. But, and Dion Kools, obviously, having trained a lot more, started at centre-back again. Not exactly his favourite position, but he looked okay. Di Paola, I mean, again, I was at the office and we were talking to some of the pundits prior to the games. And a lot of them were just kind of like, I still don't understand why we start with Di Paola, because he clearly doesn't fit the Malaysian style of play under Tan Cheng Ho. And even though he scored a goal against Vietnam, it was a penalty. It was a well-taken penalty. I'll give him that. But I don't think he looked entirely convincing. I really don't think he sort of had a retribution moment yesterday. I don't think so. I don't think he redeemed himself. I think he looked... he struggled. I think he looked a little out of place in that Malaysian side. And I don't think he offered what we needed him to offer. And I think he did things that we could have gotten from, a local Malaysian boy. So at the end of the day, we lost 2-1. There was that you know, questionable penalty decision at the end for Vietnam. But I, for me, like, I just don't want to dwell on a penalty decision, because the reality is this was a game that we should have done much better in. We played much better than we did against UAE, but we should have performed much better. We should have converted some of our chances, and ultimately we didn't. We really didn't. We looked the shade of ourselves, and it's a result that we've got to expect, because Vietnam played their game. We've seen this. We've seen them do this against Malaysia three times, I think, now in the last like 4 years. It's the same strategy, and yet we just can't find a way to deal with it.
Yeah, and I mean, mentioning Brendan Gan, you don't have to remind Thai fans about him. We all remember that goal that he scored against us. So yeah, it's hard to forget. Yeah, other than the players you've mentioned, who do you think are the key players that Thailand should look out for in this game?
Oh man, that's really difficult, because it's not exactly like we're talking about a team in form at the moment. I mean, Brendan is the obvious one. Like, I was just going back at, looking at his clips against Thailand, and you know, many people remember the goal that he scored because of his combination play and you know, and all that. But I think what was astonishing was the fact that maybe about 40 seconds prior to scoring that goal, he actually made this incredible tracking back run and did a sliding tackle to regain possession. And within a span of like 5 seconds after making the tackle, he was already building up play with like Shami and Sumari down the left. So like, that's the kind of player that Malaysians have not had for a very long time, you know, and Malaysians absolutely adore that. And his desire and his work rate on the pitch is very infectious, because whenever Brendan is on the pitch, you see the other guys being lifted as well. You see the other midfielders like Shami Kuti or Azam, them playing at a higher tempo. And that's how big of a miss he was against UAE. So I think, I mean, Brendan is the one to watch. But I will name one boy. And again, I'm not sure if Tan is going to start him, because obviously the whole Malaysia has been calling for this boy to start. Safawi has not had a great time. He's been struggling with fitness and injury. Sumari has not had a great time as well in the league, barely played. Still struggling with fitness. The one that has really stood out in the league for JDT even is this boy called Arif Aiman. He's about 18, 19 only. He plays on the flanks. He can really dribble. In fact, statistically, he's like, I think he completes more dribbles than any other players in the Malaysian league at the moment. So Arif Aiman is the one to watch. I don't know if Tan will start him, but when he came on against Vietnam, he was the only one causing like havoc for the Vietnamese defenders. So for me, if he starts, he will definitely be the one to watch, Arif Aiman.
Yeah, it's a very interesting one. And on the point of Brendan Gan, I guess for Thai fans, the best comparison would be Thitipan, because in our game against the UAE, him coming on after missing the Indonesia game, he completely changed it. We pressed so much higher up the pitch. He ran so much more. He changed. I thought we played way better against the UAE because of having that kind of box-to-box player in the middle of the park. It's really important when you want to play this kind of football. I'll switch gears with my next question slightly and ask about the next thing that we will have coming up, which is the Asian qualifiers for 2023 Asian Cup in China. We both look like we're going to go automatically to the third round of that and avoid the playoffs. And I want to ask, like, are Malaysian fans looking forward to that campaign? And what are your expectations from it?
I think if you ask me, if it, like as we're recording this, this is like, you know, quite literally 24 hours after the game was played. I don't think Malaysian fans are looking forward to any Malaysian games at all at this moment, not even the one against Thailand. Because like the mood is just, you know, absolutely dreadful at the moment. It's the reality that we've got to face. I know there's a lot of frustration at the moment, but that frustration should just stop with the fans. I think for the team, they need to really switch their focus, because it's not over. And it's not as if the team doesn't have enough in it to really make a push and qualify for the Asian Cup. It's possible. It's possible to even go to the Asian Cup and do well as well. So I think there's a bit of soul searching to do within the squad, within the coaching staff, in terms of what is the team that we really want to build? What are the players that we really want to build the team around for the next couple of years? Not just to qualify for the Asian Cup, but to also then take us and do well at the Asian Cup. Because you've got a decent core of players, but you've also got players who are, you know, sort of struggling at the moment, getting past their peak. A lot has been said about Ideal Zafuan's performance at the back. Make no mistakes, he's a real warrior. He's a player that has served the country with distinction. But a couple of times he's looked out of pace in the Middle East in some of these games. So there's a lot of question marks about him. So I think there's a bit of soul searching to do, especially from the point of view of the naturalized boys, right? Are they really players that we want in the team? Because individually, they might have quality, but do they really fit the kind of football we want to play? At the moment, from the games we've played in the Middle East, which is against Kuwait, which is against Bahrain, UAE and Vietnam, I genuinely don't feel like they fit the style of play. I genuinely don't feel that. This is not a criticism of them. This is not a criticism of their ability. It's just a criticism of style. And I genuinely don't feel they fit. So I think moving forward, though, there are very important questions that Tan Cheng Ho needs to sort of consider and answer and figure things out, which is with his coaching staff and the association as a whole, before we build our squad for the next stage of the qualifiers.
Yeah, and the question of naturalized players is a debate we often have on Thai Central and on this podcast. Probably an interesting topic for another episode, that one, and to get your view on how it's gone from Malaysia. But I actually want to ask about your view about Thailand, because as close neighbors and rivals, you've seen Thailand's recent developments. And we debate all the time about whether or not Thailand have gone backwards since Zico left and how far backwards we've gone and all this. And I want to know, I'm very interested to know what other Southeast Asian fans think about Thailand and how they've lost their place, in air quotes, as the dominant force in Southeast Asia. So from your perspective, what have you made of Thailand's developments over the past couple of years?
It's a bit... So in a sense, Malaysians still consider Thailand to be a beacon of football stability. So there might be ups and downs, but the downs, you know, aren't major drops, right? Like over the last decade or so, you could easily label Thailand as the most consistent team in Southeast Asia. Every tournament in Southeast Asia, whether you win it or not, but you're there, you're somewhere there, right? And those performances have built sort of like this reputation of Thailand amongst Malaysian fans as if like you guys are beacons of stability. Now, with regards to this particular qualifiers, there was a lot of confusion within the Malaysian setup when the squad was being built and some names were not being in there. And that's when I remember talking to you about it, I think on Twitter, and asking you like, where are these guys? Like some of these Japanese-based players that are not part there. And I mean, it's frustrating that Terasil is injured. It's frustrating that perhaps Chanatip is not fit as well. But to me, it doesn't make sense that Teraton Bunmattan isn't there.
Yeah.
And Teraton is a player that I have watched a lot more of after he went to the J-League than I even did while he was playing in Southeast Asia and while, you know, he was playing for Thailand against our country or stuff like that. Because the crazy thing about Teraton is in Japan, he's evolved into such a fascinating player. And if you're if anyone is a tactical nerd out there, Teraton is the kind of player that you want to observe because he's so functional within a team like Yokohama Marinos that has such a tactically driven coach, and his role tucking in as an inverted fullback in certain games. I mean, he's been a really, really super solid player in Japan. So for me, those are the kind of players that you want to see in your national colours. Like, we celebrate the idea of players going abroad. And part of that is because we know that once they go abroad, they will evolve, they will become better players, they will be more experienced, and they will bring every bit of this additional benefit of playing abroad into the national team and then drive the team forward. That's part of the, you know, the reason we get very excited. And so to me, from the point of view of a fan, I put myself in the shoes of you know, Thailand fans. And to me, it was very disappointing. It was disappointing that Teraton opted to not be a part of the squad because, you know, like if I'm a fan, I would have been excited to see all his development, all his experience being used to drive Thailand. And this is not a friendly game. This is not even a SEA Games campaign. This is not a Suzuki Cup. I mean, Suzuki Cup is a very prestigious tournament, don't get me wrong, but ultimately it's just it's a Southeast Asian fanfare. It doesn't necessarily drive national team growth or whatever. Like, this is the pinnacle, right? World Cup qualifiers. It doesn't get higher than this. So to miss a stage like this, it's very difficult for me to digest, honestly.
Yeah, and it's been very difficult for Thai fans to digest. And I think we have a big reckoning coming up with Thiraton, which I think fans don't want to talk about. But there's been the question about if Nishino is still the coach, do you pick him again? That's the question that we've been discussing. It's a scary question for us because he's so good. We need him. But at the same time, we need to, you know, there's so many conflicting views on that. Another thing that you said, I think you're probably the first person on this podcast to call Thailand a beacon of stability, because if you looked at the inside of the way Thai football operates sometimes, I mean, my God, I don't think many people in Thailand think we're a beacon of stability, but I think our fans need to hear that. I think our fans needed to hear that. And I've been urging calm whenever I can on Twitter, on the website, wherever I can, just like everybody calm down. I'm glad you said that. I think we need Thai fans to look in a bigger perspective and be okay. It was a bad campaign. It's not the end of the world and we must move forward.
I mean, Jared, like it's a matter of relativity, right? We're not saying that Thailand are a beacon of stability in the context of like world football.
Yeah,
we're talking about a region. Yeah, we're talking about a region where instability has always like plagued. You don't even need to look at Indonesia, right? I absolutely love Indonesian football to bits, but it's as unstable as they get, right?
Yeah.
You look at Vietnam. Obviously, the national team are doing incredibly well, right? The national team have been super consistent over the last 5-6 years from the youth level, under 20 World Cup, them doing well at the under 23 championship. There's been a consistent rise under the head coach. But as a football ecosystem as a whole, you speak to Bill from Vietnam Soccer on Twitter, and he'll tell you all about the drama that happens within the leagues. Some of the horrendous funny things that happen within the league. And the same can be said about Malaysia, right? We've got JDT, obviously, painting a very positive picture of Malaysian football. But you look past JDT and there's consistent issues, consistent problems, even with salary payments. So when you put all of these things into context, that's when you look at Thailand and kind of feel that relatively, they are a beacon of stability.
You mentioned earlier about the style of play of Tan Cheng Ho. And I want to come back to that with maybe a slightly broad question, right? I think you will enjoy, as a tactics person, you probably enjoy this question. I want to ask really what sort of approach and style of play you think is best for Southeast Asian teams when they're trying to perform well on the continent. So, for example, I would compare Tan Cheng Ho's possession-based football to something like kind of what Zico did, Kiatty Saksanamuang, our previous head coach. And he, very expansive football, always want to take the game to the opponent, regardless of what stage you're playing on. Defensively, not always so organized. And for what we found when we had Zico was it was a fantastic way of dominating locally, regionally, but it was a real struggle to take that sort of football onto the continent and play well with that. Because once we got to the third round of World Cup qualifying, things really went south for us. I don't think we didn't win a single game in that campaign. And on the other hand, you have the way Vietnam play currently under their coach Park Hang-seo, playing a far more functional game, far more defensive game, really about, you know, intensely pressing in midfield, but mainly being off the ball, being disciplined, being organized, not necessarily being an enterprising attacking team. And something that's somewhat similar to what Milovan Rajevac tried to do with Thailand. And I think that Vietnam, now that they're going to go, most likely, I'd say 90% likely, going to go to the next round of World Cup qualifying, we're going to get to see whether that approach fares better. But I want to know what you think about, if you're a Southeast Asian team and you want to grow and you want to be competitive on the continent, do you stick with playing a possession-based attacking football, or do you transition to a more pragmatic, off-the-ball, solidity organization kind of play?
I think in an ideal world, we'd love to see Southeast Asian teams playing possession-based football all the way through. But I think realistically, to play a possession-based football, and this is just a personal opinion, yeah, to play a possession-based football at the highest level, you need to have that style be part of your identity as a footballer from a very young age. Mm-hmm. Because when you're up against teams like teams from the Middle East, when you're even when you're up against teams like Japan, for you to to make that difficult decision of passing the ball around when you're under duress, when you're under stress, when you're under pressure, I think that doesn't just come from an instruction within the dressing room. That has to come from years of conditioning. And conditioning doesn't just come from what you do, what you're told by your coaches over the last 10 years. Conditioning comes from you watching your team play possession-based when you were maybe 15, 16. Conditioning comes from you 100% believing that possession-based style football is the way to go. So it's not a thing that we can just do very quickly and turn it around against like the most intimidating opponents out there. Like, you know, there are very few teams in world football that can play possession-based football under high pressure. Very few. And the ones that are able to do it, you can trace back a culture and a history that stems very deep and very long. So I think as much as I love Tan Cheng Ho's brand of football, I definitely don't think Tan Cheng Ho's brand of football is the one to beat teams like, for example, Japan. Or it's the kind of style of football that's going to beat some major teams in Asia. Now, that's the question of whether possession-based football is enough for Southeast Asian teams to go all the way further. Now, the other part of the question is, which do I prefer more? So, obviously, I enjoy watching possession-based football more. But Park Hang-seo's pragmatism is the one that's taking Vietnam further. And what I love about Park Hang-seo's pragmatism is it doesn't mean that he's conservative. It means that he's tactically flexible. And we see that from Vietnam. They have this ability to be possession-driven against teams that are weaker than them, against teams that sit back. They have the capacity to be possession-driven. That's what they did against Indonesia the other day. In fact, it's what they did against UAE even when they beat them in 2019. I was going through the numbers the other day, and throughout the World Cup qualifying stage, the most... like Vietnam completed the most amount of passes in all their World Cup qualifiers, specifically in that game against UAE.
Wow.
They completed more passes and dominated possession more than they did against Thailand, more than they did against Malaysia. So that's a very interesting thing, because when they want to switch that gear on, they can. But against Malaysia, what we've seen in the last three games that they've played is, whether it's in the Suzuki Cup or the World Cup qualifiers, four games in fact, what we've seen is just them always playing with five at the back, pragmatic, hitting us on the counter and knowing how to consistently just destroy us. And that's the kind of tactical variation that I think is the fundamental part of his pragmatism. Do I think that this level of variation and pragmatism exists in Tan Cheng Ho's locker? I don't know. I really don't. Because I've only seen us play one style under Tan Cheng Ho efficiently, which is the possession-based style, which is the style on the front foot. When we try to play conservatively, it's never looked fluid. It's never looked convincing. We tried to sit deeper and not press aggressively against UAE, but it definitely didn't work at all. We have seen us do that in some games, in other games, even against Bahrain, definitely didn't work at all. So when you don't have that variety in yourself, if the only way you know how to play is that front foot, then you've got no choice but to play that way. And that's why Malaysian fans are upset. We are okay with pragmatism if we can execute it perfectly, but if we can't, go back to the style that brought us close, which is that playing football on the front foot. But you have to admire Park Hang-seo's Vietnamese side, because they've got that ability to switch gears into whatever style they want to play, depending on the opposition they play. And that's exactly why they are in the position that they're in at the moment, which is, you know, like you said, 90% certain to get to the next stage. And look, I know this is going to sound really audacious and it's going to be absolutely historic, but I can imagine this Vietnamese side beating some of the biggest teams in Asia at the moment, honestly, Jen. Mm-hmm. I can genuinely see them like, especially with Quang Hai in the side. I mean, I can see them going toe-to-toe with some of the best teams in Asia. And even if that means getting all the way to the final stage of the World Cup qualifiers, I can see them doing that, because they're so structured and they're so disciplined, and that the variation that they have in their bank sets them up really well for some of the big teams across the region.
Yeah, and I think that that flexibility that you're mentioning is something that neither, in a time perspective, neither Zico nor Rajovic had. Zico's, I think when I compare the development under Zico to Malaysia under San Cheng Ho, it's very similar. That they just couldn't, they didn't know how to close the gaps and how to sit back and you know, close the space and defend when it really came down to it. That wasn't something that Zico had worked on and really believed in himself. And then Rajovic, on the other hand, was always defense first. It was defense first against Malaysia. It was defense first against everybody. And that drove Thai fans off the wall as well. Of course, I opposed both of their sackings vehemently. I thought both should be given more time. But football is football. I think Nishino has really been trying to make us flexible. But again, Nishino is a topic that's been discussed too much on this podcast. We will come back to him when it's appropriate. I'll go to my last question now, asking you to predict for Malaysia and Thailand. What do you think will happen in that game?
This is a tricky one. Given two perspectives, yeah. First is, I think there will be a desire from Malaysia to sort of salvage some pride. Also because Tan Cheng Ho's dad passed away yesterday, literally on match day.
Oh, wow.
And I think, you know, emotions will be super sky high within the camp. I think players will be riled up to at least do something for him. At the same time, I think some of the players that haven't got minutes might play. Players that I genuinely think should have played prior to this. So they are better players in terms of form. So if Arif Aiman and all these guys definitely do play, it's a major strength. The only question for Malaysia is, we don't have Corbin Ong. He's suspended. And in the squad, we've only got one recognized left back, which is him. So it remains to be seen who Tan Cheng Ho plays at left back position. So taking all that into consideration, and the second perspective is the fact that when I watched Thailand's performance against Indonesia, it was not convincing. I thought they were there for the taking. I think the team has got a lot of young, exciting boys. But I don't think it, like, for example, if Thiraton was there on the day, I don't think they lost that game. I really don't think you guys lose. I think you guys win that game if Thiraton was there, whether, you know, as an inverted fullback or a midfielder. But I think there's a bit of inexperience in the team in a sense where they can get opened up. So I'm leaning towards a slim victory for Malaysia.
Yeah, and I can tell you, if it is a slim victory for Malaysia, there will be an absolute meltdown on our end, if that is to be the case. Thailand really need a win. I'm not going to predict. I never predict. I refuse to curse games with my predictions. So I will, again, dodge doing that. But yeah, it should be an exciting game because, yeah, both teams have reasons to win, very strong reasons to win, even if it's not for getting to the next round, if it's not for even collecting points. I think it's a very important game for both teams to sort of fix what's gone wrong in this campaign so far. So hopefully that'll be a very exciting game. So thank you, Keish, very much for joining us today. Hopefully you enjoyed the game as well, and hope to speak to you again soon.
Thank you so much for having me, man. It's been a real pleasure. Hope to speak to you guys soon.